though I'm not going to pick on anyone, but we'll see how it goes. Okay? So the first story which I ever heard about Emuna, about really having faith, is a story about Ricardo, the tightrope walker. Now, some of you might be familiar with this story, but it really is the basics of Emuna. I heard it when I was at camp, and I remember it till this day. Because Ricardo was the best tightrope walker in the entire world. Come in, have a seat. And he had a big following of fans because he was so incredibly talented. And one day he decided that he was going to do something that had never been done before. And that was to walk across the Great Niagara Falls. Has anyone been, by the way?
Yeah.
If you go there, then that's it. You don't need any more classes anymore. Just go down. That's it. But if you haven't been there, and even if you've done that and that's not enough, keep listening. So, he decides he's going to do this crazy thing, which is going to walk across Niagara Falls on a tightrope with no safety net in front of a big, big crowd of people. And so the big day comes, he invites all of his followers, he announces it on social media or whatever they did in those days. And Ricardo comes to Niagara Falls, and everyone's there watching. And Ricardo's got everything set, and he's about to take his first step, but before he begins, he turns to the crowd.
Sorry to interrupt, I'm trying to tell you 11:25 to try and beat.
Got this. Okay, we'll do our best. So, he's about to begin this crazy stunt, and he turns to the crowd, and he says, I, the great Ricardo, the best tightrope walker in the world, I'm going to cross Niagara Falls right now before your very eyes. Who here believes that I can do it? And all of the audience together, the whole crowd in unison, shout, we believe. Right, this is the bit where you have to participate. Okay, on three, guys, you say, we believe. Okay, one, two, three. We believe. That was pathetic. I said we're going to get you involved here. Okay, right, I'm going to be Ricardo. Okay, here we go. Who believes that I, the great Ricardo, can walk across the Niagara Falls with no safety net? Right here, right now. Do you believe?
We believe.
Okay, that's better. Okay, we're going to get better at this. Okay, and you're never going to believe what happens, but Ricardo starts walking. He's a little bit wobbly, shaky, and eventually, you're not going to believe it, but Ricardo makes it to the other side, safe and sound. And when he finishes, he says, you know what, this is not enough. Next week, we're going to try another stunt, and I'm going to do the same thing backwards. And everyone's like, ooh, backwards. The big day comes a week later, there's a massive crowd, it's even bigger this time, and he turns to the crowd and he says, who believes that I, the great Ricardo, I'm going to walk across Niagara Falls backwards? And all the crowd turns to him and says, we believe. God, very quiet crowd in this room. Okay, they say, we believe, it's crazy. And he begins and he's very, very shaky going across backwards, right, however he does it. And you're never going to believe it, but he makes it. And when he's done, he says, this is not good enough. He says, next time, I'm coming back on my unicycle. Yeah, what do you think of that? Okay, I'm coming back on my unicycle. So he gets out his unicycle a week later. He's about to go. He turns to the crowd. Who believes that I can do it? And everyone says, we believe. I'll leave you to relax now, okay? That's enough. You're warmed up. Okay, great. And he makes it to the other side. The next week he comes back. He says, I'm going to do it blindfolded, backwards, on the unicycle. Who believes? And guess what? The whole crowd says, we believe. He goes for it. He's very shaky, very shaky. And he makes it to the other side. And then Rebecca walks in. Oh, hi, Rebecca. Look at this. Anyway, after all those crazy stunts, Ricardo turns to the crowd and he says, this time I'm going to try something that's never been done before. I'm going to go across Niagara Falls on a tightrope, on a unicycle, backwards, and blindfolded. Except this time, I'm going to do it with someone on my shoulders. And he says to the crowd, who believes I can do it? And everyone says, we believe. We believe. Crazy. He says, okay, great. Now I need a volunteer. Who's going to do it? And as you can imagine, not one person volunteers to go with Ricardo. And he's never able to do the stunt because he can't find someone to go with him. Now, why do I share this ridiculous light story with you this morning? And the answer is because, girls, I can see you thinking. I can see you thinking. Emuna is something which is absolutely core to our foundational Jewish belief. As from Jews, we have to have Emuna, we have to have faith. And so we walk the walk, we talk the talk, and we say, yeah, we have emunah, what do you mean? Of course we do. Now, what do you mean? I keep kosher, I keep Shabbos, I have emunah. But when push comes to shove, and when that moment comes, we say we have emunah, but do we really? Do we really know what it means? And in the big moments in our lives, the challenges that come forward, in those moments, are we able to tap into emunah and what it really is? And that's what makes it difficult, because dates on Shabbos, like, you know, it is what it is, and you keep Shabbos. Okay, great. You know, kosher, we know what it is, we keep it. But emunah is not necessarily so straightforward, because we can claim that we're doing it, and know we have it, but sometimes when we're tested, no, not me. No. Good luck, Ricardo. Good luck. See you later. So, today's topic that we're going to discuss is more of a philosophical one. And if anyone actually read the topic, okay, I think they couched it as emunah and bitachon versus hashgacha pratis. Now, this is actually a big conundrum, and that's the conundrum which I'm going to describe to you with two more light stories. And here they are. One is a famous one, and I can see the mums. I know that you've had this happen to you. Which is, everyone dreads the worst situation that you can possibly have in the five towns. And that is that you haven't finished your shopping for Shabbos. And unfortunately, it's Friday afternoon, and there's chaos everywhere. And you know that there's not enough time, because the Gourmet Glout parking lot is a nightmare. And by the time you get in and you get out, you're not going to have finished making your Shabbos, and it's going to be a disaster. So, one lady, Friday afternoon, she's in that particular conundrum, that problem, and you know what happens? She goes for it, and she davens to Hashem. She says, Hashem, please find me a spot quickly. Please help me get home for Shabbos. And she's davening, and she's saying to Hillel, and she gets to Gourmet Glatz. And as you can imagine, not only is there like a line to get in, there's not one spot. So she's davening, says, Hashem, please find me a parking spot. I need to get home for Shabbos. I've got so many guests. Please help me find a spot. And she's circling in Gourmet Glatz, and nothing's happening. She's sweating, and she's like getting stressed. Ah, what am I going to do? And she's driving around looking. There's people carrying things, and she's missing the spots. And she's davening and saying to Hillel, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of her eye, she sees some reverse lights. Is that what you call it in America? You know, the white light that shows the cars backing up, right? She sees it, she's like, ah! And so she quickly drives behind, and she waits behind that spot. And then all of a sudden, it starts to move, and before the other aggressive driver's behind, she quickly zips in the spot. She makes it, she goes, yes! And she goes, thank you, Hashem, but I found a spot. Don't need you anymore. That's story number one, okay? Story number one. Now, story number two, and this one you might know, is when I first heard this story, I wasn't so connected to it. But now, after what's happened in Houston and in Florida and other places, it's actually quite serious. But anyway, I'll tell you the story. It's about a particular fellow who was in a town that was getting flooded. This is a really famous story, so if you haven't heard this one, I don't know where you've been, okay? But this guy is in his house, and the flood starts to rise, and this huge, big Jeep comes along and says, quick, get inside the Jeep, the water's rising, I'm going to save you. And so the guy says to the driver, no, it's okay, I'm going to be fine, God will save me. Okay, so the guy says, fine, the Jeep driver drives off. Next, the water's rising and rising, and the guy's like, goes up onto the second floor, and all of a sudden a boat comes past. And the boat driver yells, he says, quick, come, jump into the boat, I'm going to save you. And the guy says, no, it's okay, I'll be fine, God will save me. So the water continues to rise. He goes up onto the roof, and he's on the roof waiting for God to save him. This helicopter comes, and the helicopter comes. It lowers down the rope, and he's there, and the helicopter says, guys, just grab on. We're going to save you. And the guy says, no, it's okay. God will save me. And unfortunately, the guy dies. Goes up to heaven, and he gets to heaven, and he's face to face with God, and he says, what happened? I had such strong emunah that you were going to save me. I was waiting for you to save me. What happened? And God says, what are you talking about? I sent you the Jeep, the boat, the helicopter. And these are the two stories that I'm going to share with you. And the question is one of these stories right? Is there an equilibrium or does it depend on the person? So just to recap, we have story number one of the person who works really, really hard to find a parking spot. And in the end, they decide that they found the parking spot on their own. And it was all down to the mum's incredible skills of spotting the reverse lights driving around, and they found the spot. Nothing to do with God. And really, it's all down to our own efforts, how whatever success we have in life. And then you have story number two, which is perhaps we should just have this incredible emunah, bitachon in Hashem, and Hashem is going to take care of us. So we kind of have two opposites. And really, I think part of what we're supposed to tackle today is how could it possibly be that all of these things shim together? So what does that mean? If you have emunah, let's just flesh this out. If you have emunah that Hashem's going to take care of you, let's say, make sure that you find a job, find a shidduch, pass your test, whatever it is, okay? And we believe in HP, what Charlie was talking about, Hashgacha Pratis, that everything is preordained, everything is destined to be, then all we need to do is sit back, have emunah, don't do anything, and we're going to get whatever we're supposed to get. Like, if we're supposed to get the parking spot, it will just come to us. If we're supposed to be saved, it will just come to us. If we're supposed to pass the test without doing any studying, it's going to happen. God will figure it out. So, if that's the case, the question is, how does actually doing any what's called hishtadlus come into the equation, actually trying? Where does that come into the picture? Does it not? Clearly, the fellow who doesn't take the jeep, the boat, and the helicopter doesn't try, doesn't work out so well for him. However, there's many stories that you might be aware of great rabbis or very great spiritual people who don't make any hishtadlus whatsoever, and it all works out great. Anyone got any of those stories? Just want to know if I'm in the presence of any greatness here. No? Anyone? No one? That's fine, you're all normal, Baruch Hashem. Okay, so this is what we want to try and get to the bottom of today. I don't know if anyone's had any thoughts or difficulties with this particular topic, but that's what we're going to discuss. So, first of all, yes, there absolutely are different Mefarshim commentaries that say that all you need to do is have emunah or keep the Torah and everything is going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. If we work on our emunah to such a level that we trust in Hashem so much, all we need to do is believe in Hashem and everything will be taken care of. Sounds crazy, huh? But there are Mefarshim that say as such things. Let me just get my sheet here to remind me. So you have the Ramban, you have the Taz, and you also have the Rabbeinu Bechai says you keep the Torah properly. You don't need to worry about anything. Hashem is going to give you a parnasa. He's going to take care of you, and that's it. Okay, then we can keep going. And in terms of medical, taking care of medical needs, we also have similar mafarshim that say, Davos Hashem, have emunah, and everything's going to be fine. So I think there's a big topic which many of you will be familiar with, and that is miracles. Has anyone had a miracle happen for them before? Anyone? No? No one? Yes, here we go. What is it? Tell me, darling.
I'm alive.
You're alive. Okay, so then everyone's had the same miracle.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I love that perspective. Leanne, what do you think of that? It's good, huh? Love that perspective. Okay, anybody else? Anyone else had a miracle, a different type of miracle? But that's an excellent miracle. I agree. Anyone else? No? No more miracles? So the big question is that's discussed in Chazal is, should we rely on miracles or not? And the Gemara comes up in a couple of places, in Shabbos and in Tanis, says very clearly that miracles should not be expected, it should not be relied upon, and this is discussed in the sources. And so, if miracles, it's very clear that miracles shouldn't be relied upon, then it seems that really earning a parnasa without doing any work, or being cured without seeing the doctor, or even finding a shidduch with just kind of staying in your room at home, right, could perhaps be considered a miracle, because it's not really the norm for someone to earn a living without lifting a finger. It's not normal, unless anyone here does that. It's not normal. But at the same time, we do know that, of course, Hashem can make anything happen, right? But what's considered a miracle? And so that's a big question that we need to try and get to the bottom of. But it definitely seems from all of the Mefarshim discussing that we're not supposed to rely on miracles, that we're not supposed to ask Hashem for miracles, that we need to actually put in some serious hishtadlus and some effort with everything that we do, because it's not a hashgafically correct thing to want or to rely on miracles. And so if we just bring it down to the modern day commentary, or almost modern, of the Igros Moshe, written by Rav Moshe Feinstein, that you should all be familiar with. So he says that it's asur, it's forbidden to rely on miracles, and everybody has to get a job. It's practical halakha now. Everyone has to get a job, you can't rely on miracles. And he says that it's straight up, it's in a pasuk in Bereishis, which is b'zeas lechem tachalatecha, which is as follows. You might be familiar with this. So Adam and Eve, Garden of Eden, and Eve, Chava, convinces Adam to eat from the tree. And you know what happens? What happens? What happens? Come on, girls, you all know this. And of course, Adam goes and eats. Adam eats from the tree. And then it's a big disaster, because we don't get to live in spiritual bliss our whole lives, all of us, anymore. We actually have to live in a real world of materialism and have emuna. That's the reality of what happened from that one Chet Adam HaRishon, the original sin of man. But more so, there was actually punishments that came with that Aveira, with that sin, which resulted in this Bezeas Lechem Apecha, which is that we actually have to work for a living. Because when Adam and Chava lived in the Garden of Eden, they didn't have to do any work. They just sat there, and they were in this incredible state of spirituality where they were just getting closer to Hashem simply by being there. It's like an escalator. You know escalators? Has anyone ever gone up one the wrong way? Don't do it, but it's fun. Right? So essentially, when Adam and Chava were in Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden, spirituality, you were like on an upwards escalator. You just had to sit there, and you were getting closer to Hashem. Just like that. And then after Adam HaRishon, after Adam ate from that tree of knowledge, so everything got reversed, and we're on this downward escalator. If we don't work on our emunah, which is why we're here today, and we don't work on our spirituality, we don't work on getting closer to Hashem, so we get further away from Hashem, which is why this morning's so important. And that's what happens. So everything got flipped. But it's also good, because that entire connection and relationship that we have to build with Hashem is all down to us and our hard work and effort that we put in. But what happens? What's another result, apart from the spiritual reality of the universe getting flipped? Is that man and woman both get punished. And the punishment is very clear. In the pasuk, like I said, you can have a look, you can look it up, Bereishis 3:19, is that man has to work for a living. This is part of the new reality of the world. We have to work hard for our spirituality, and we also have to work hard for our regular parnasa. And so the Igros Moshe says, straight up, you have to have the munah, but you have to make your hishtabas, you have to try and earn a living. Everybody. And he says, it doesn't matter if you're a gadol, if you're a very great rabbi, it doesn't matter if you're very holy or spiritual, it doesn't matter who you are, you're all part of this particular category of having to make hishtabas to work. And yes, have the munah, but you have to make an effort. Now, we can talk more broadly about that, which is, all you need to do is make an effort to earn a living, but you mustn't get to the point where you're like the woman in the car and the parking spot. So the Igros Moshe explains that the person who sits in Kollel and his learning and his support comes from the community or whatever it is, doesn't get to see and have a stronger emunah as the person who's in business. So what's his logic? It was interesting when I was reading it. The logic is that someone who works in business gets to see Yad Hashem in his everyday dealings. Because the person in business thinks he's going to work really hard at this, and therefore the money's going to come from here. But what actually happens is the money comes from over there. And then he'll try and work hard over there, and then the money will come from over there. And he sees, whoever it is who's in business, sees that the amount of money which they get and the parnassa which they get rewarded comes straight from Hashem. And everything's really from Hashem. It's not as a direct result of their effort. So the hishtadlus and the effort is it's a mitzvah to make hishtadlus, to make a living. It's required to make hishtadlus. However, on condition that you realize that your mitzvah and your requirement is just to make an effort. The money is going to come from Hashem. What's going to result is going to come from Hashem, and Hashem will figure out exactly how much and when to get it to you. And it's not going to be a direct result of your toil, your effort, your work. And what's supposed to happen is that you're supposed to be able to see with the eyes that Charlie was speaking about, is that when you realize that everything comes from Hashem, and you're looking for Him in your everyday, whether it's work, school work, whether it's your sports, whether it's your relationships with your family, your friends, when you're looking for Hashem, then it's like, oh my goodness. You realize how Hashem works, and you get to see how everything falls out. Okay. So, same question comes with medical, right? Emunah, to me, when I think about Emunah, very often it's connected with people being healed who are very sick, who aren't going to make it. We have to have Emunah. So, what do the Mefarshim say about that? So, first of all, as always, there are a few, but not very many, Mefarshim say that it's absolutely down to Hashem. Don't involve doctors, nothing. Hashem's going to take care of it and heal you. There are those. But most of the Mefarshim say absolutely not. And it's down to us to go to the doctor and take medicines, keep fit, and do everything that we can to stay healthy. And so we have the Chovas HaLavavos, the Kitz HaShulchan Aruch, the Rashba. And the Rashba really quotes directly from a pasuk in Shmos, where it says, "V'rapa yirapeh." So it's a double lashon, a double language of, you're surely going to be healed. And from this double language, they extrapolate that Hashem is making doctors His messenger to heal people. And through that, really, a lot of the Mefarshim discuss that it's critical to make effort in our health and going to see doctors and nurses and all the right things. And the Igros Moshe says, so where does the davening come in? So now where does the davening come in if we're really relying on doctors and medicines for our health? So he says two things. Number one is doctors can make mistakes. Right? So you go to a doctor, you're trusting them with your life, with everything. It's a big deal. Right? It's a big deal. So you have to daven to make sure that the doctor is going to do the right things and not make any mistakes. And at the same time is that we have to daven and keep our focus and our emunah that the doctor is just really a messenger, a shaliach, and ultimately any refuah, any healing is going to come from Hashem. So that's a really critical perspective that we're supposed to have. Again, we have to have emunah that Hashem can heal anyone, anything. It's, you know, however bleak it might seem, Hashem can make miracles. But at the same time, we have to recognize that those miracles generally come through the messengers of doctors, incredible new medical discoveries that we have today in 2019, I can say today, right? Crazy discoveries, and we should utilize those. But ultimately, it's going to be down to Hashem. We have to daven, and we have to have our emunah. So we're running out of time, but I have one more very important category, which always comes up in girls' schools, of course, and that is of shidduchim, of marriages. So, somewhat, and I can see like people, you know, thinking. So we have earning a living. I think everyone knows that we need to make an effort somewhat, have a munah, and we need to daven. Same thing when it comes to medical success. Absolutely. We know that we go to see doctors, we take our medicine, we stay healthy, we daven, and we have a munah. And when it comes to shidduchim, like how much, if any, effort, you know, do you need to put in? I said kind of as a joke, but truth is that without making any effort, it could be that, you know, your mum knows someone, or your cousin knows someone, or, you know, you see a guy walking in the street, or whatever it is, and you don't really make any effort, and that's it. What's more so is that there's very famous chazal that gets discussed around this topic of emunah and hashkacha pratis, which is that every shidduch, we know, is decided 40 days before you're born. Hashem creates these special shidduchim 40 days before you're born, and that's it. So it's already decided, right? This is like hashkacha pratis, which is decided even before you're born, who you're going to marry. So what difference does it make if you do something, you don't do something? And what's more, which is really interesting, is when Chazal discuss this topic, they say that if someone davens really hard to marry a particular boy or a particular girl, they can even change the person who they're supposed to marry. Sounds crazy. So for example, you see a guy that has got the most amazing midas ever. So kind, so wonderful, so amazing. You daven that you want to marry him so hard, Hashem allows you to marry him and he's not the right guy. Is that crazy? That's what Chazal talk about. Crazy thing. And anyway, so eventually things figure out and you can marry the right person. But the point is that your tefillah is so strong, you could even marry, someone could end up marrying the wrong person through tefillah, because tefillah is so, so incredibly powerful. But the bottom line is, everything's decided 40 days before, so somehow you should just meet that person anyway, it's going to happen. Is there any effort that's required? And is the effort purely just emunah that's been spoken about today? Let's just have emunah. Let's just work on our faith in Hashem. 40 days before I was born, Hashem made me this perfect shidduch. They're going to find their way to me. Everything's going to be incredible and wonderful. I'm just going to dive and sit in my room, and everything's going to be great. Is that an appropriate approach for shidduchim? Leanne took that approach. No?
No.
So, unlike, which I would say, like for parnasa, which is something which is day in, day out, you know, that requires a lot of effort. So I think, as with everything, we go back to not relying on miracles. Is we're not supposed to rely on miracles. Generally, the way of the world is not just to, you know, get married to someone. In general, it requires effort, and most people would say, well, if you just kind of sat back and davened and, you know, met your future husband, that would probably be entering the miraculous. And therefore, you'd have to make some effort, so this wouldn't be what's considered relying on a miracle. We need to do some kind of hishtadlus. But again, the hishtadlus is not, that's not what's making the shidduch happen. The shidduch's going to happen. The shidduch was decided 40 days before. Hashem's figured it out. Hashem's going to make sure it's happened. However, we have this special mitzvah of hishtadlus, where we have to make an effort, we have to try, together with our emunah, together with our davening, to give Hashem this opportunity to work hashgacha pratis in a certain way, that everything should work. And like I said, you're going to make effort over there with one guy, and it's going to end up being the opposite. Right? You're going to think you want this kind of guy, right? With blonde hair and blue eyes, right? And is going to have like black hair and brown eyes, or whatever it is. You're going to have something in your head. You're going to think this is what I want. You're going to think this is how I'm going to find him. And shidduchim, I think more than anything, people end up with something completely different to perhaps what they think they're going to. But ultimately, especially when it comes to shidduchim, emunah is really going to be the key. It's going to be the emunah and the davening and appropriate effort. So depending on where you are, where you live, if you live here in New York and there's like millions of guys around, you know, how much effort's required, I don't know, but I would say not too much, but you have to do something what's really appropriate when the time comes. Not in high school, that's for sure not. High school is the wrong time. It's the wrong time. And that's also part of the emunah, which is like, you know, some people, I would say excessive in shabbos is worrying about it in high school. Right? Because in high school you need to worry about your work, and when it comes time to entering the right age of getting married, that's time to make some hishtadlus. Like, excessive hishtaglus for anything is a problem, and that is a lack of emunah when you make excessive hishtaglus in any area, whether it's medical, whether it's parnaso, whether it's shidduchim, or any other things, you know, even passing a test, whatever it might be. Everything has to be hishtaglus combined with davening and with emunah in Hashem. So I'm just going to finish with one story, which is one of my favorites. You know, it's one of my favorites, and Charlie also reminded me of the story about one of the locals, a local hero here in the Five Towns. And he happens to be a 9/11 survivor. And he has the most craziest story of how he survived. It's really remarkable, unbelievable. And if you never heard it from him, his name's Ari Schonbrunn. He lives in Cedarhurst, and it's really amazing.
The 11th graders heard him a few weeks ago.
Oh, you heard him?
Yeah.
Okay, great. But he says one story that he ends with, which is really nothing to do with this, but it's all to do with Emunah, and exactly what Charlie was speaking about this morning, and it's also to do with some of my original stories right back at the beginning. So he talks about this very successful businessman who's driving down the road in his very fancy Cadillac, and he's driving, he's listening to his music, he's on top of the world, and all of a sudden, as he's driving down the street, thud! It's a massive thud in the side of the car. He screeches to a halt, jumps out of the car, and he looks at the side of his car, and there's a massive dent and a scratch all the way along this beautiful Cadillac. And he looks on the side, and he sees a kid has thrown this huge rock at his car. The guy is livid. He goes over to him, he grabs this like 10-year-old kid and starts shaking him. Look what you've done! Look what you've done to my car! You're going to pay for this! And the kid's trying to like say to stop him, to get some words in, and saying, but he's like, I can't believe what you've done, just look! And he starts getting his car, and he's taking pictures, he's screaming at the kid, and the kid's trying to get this guy's attention, and he's just screaming, he's so angry, he won't let the kid get a word in. Eventually, after a couple of minutes of him going crazy and screaming and making a call and whatever, the kid manages to get this guy's attention. And he says to him, but sir, I'm so sorry, I didn't know what to do. And he points down the road and he says, look, he says, my brother is in a wheelchair and he fell out the wheelchair into the gutter and I couldn't get him back in on my own. The man says, oh my goodness. He rushes over, he puts the wheelchair back, he helps this disabled kid back into the wheelchair. And he says to the boy, I'm so, so sorry. I'm so sorry. He gives him $20. He says, yeah, just take this and please be on your way out. I'm so sorry. Gets back in his car. He starts driving. Gets to work. And when he gets to work, he closes the door, looks at the dent. And the guy says, and he makes a vow to himself. He says, from this day forth, I'm never getting this car door fixed to remember what happened on this day. So, Ari explains that Hashem speaks to us all each and every day through whispers. And that's whether it's to do with your personal life, whether it's to do with your schoolwork, your friends, your relationships. Hashem is speaking to us the whole time. And it's up to us to find those eyes that Charlie was speaking about, whether it's writing those four things or whatever method works for you, to find the way that Hashem is going to communicate with you. Because Hashem speaks to us and communicates to us all day long through whispers. And it's our job to do the hishtaglus, look for the whispers, strengthen our emunah, daven. And if we do that, then hopefully Hashem won't have to send the brick, the rock, to remind us to wake up and that we need to strengthen our emunah. Girls, it's been wonderful learning with you this morning.
What's the new one?
Ruby Taylor.
Oh, how was it?
Good.
What was the topic?
Yeah, I'm not going to see it. I'm telling you. I'm not
going to see it. I don't want to hold on to it.
Put it in the pocket. That's what I did.
I just wanted to wait till we get to the altar and say,
I'm not going to see you at the altar.
Why don't you just put it in your pocket?
Hold on. I'm going to be in the same room as you.
Yeah, so what? It's a giant room.
Put it in your pocket. Oh, Nicole.
Wait, it's a giant room.
Water? I don't know where Emily went.
I
before.
Okay. I needed to record.
Probably good. I think it's so short.
Can you hold this
for a second? Should I put it in my pocket?
Just this?
Yeah, I just need to put this in my pocket. I just didn't have a free hand.